I get this right this week. Okay, Shmot, we are beginning a new Sefer. This is big, big. I wanna do something I don't normally do. Fascinating discussion tonight. I wanna read you a story. I got this over an email, so I know it's true. But this story, it impacted me. So I wanna read you the story. If you gain nothing else from tonight but this story, this will have been worth the effort. Just an opinion. So one day, this is how this author, I think it's an anonymous author, but I could be wrong. One day when I was a freshman in high school, I noticed a kid from my class walking home from school who looked like he was carrying all of his books. What a nerd. His name was Kyle. And I wondered why anyone would bring all his books home on a Friday. I figured he must be a real nerd. I had a great weekend planned, parties and a football game with my friends the next afternoon, Baba Basra, Seam Shots, you know, okay? So I shrugged my shoulders and continued on my way. As I was walking, I saw a bunch of kids running towards him. They ran at him, knocking all his books out of his arms, tripping him, so he landed in the dirt. His glasses went flying, and I saw them land in the grass about 10 feet from him. He looked up, and I saw this terrible sadness in his eyes. My heart went out to him, so I jogged over to help him look for his glasses. He was on his hands and knees crawling around looking for them, and I saw a tear in his eyes. Spotting his glasses a few feet away, I handed them to him, and I said, "Those guys are jerks. They really should get lives." He looked at me and he said, "Hey, thanks." And there was a big smile on his face. It was one of those smiles that showed real gratitude. I helped him pick up his books, and I asked him where he lived. As it turned out, he lived near me, so I asked him why I'd never seen him before. He said he'd been in a private school till recently. I would have never hung out with a private school kid before. We talked all the way home, and I carried some of his books. He turned out to be a pretty cool kid, so I asked him if he wanted to play a little football with my friends and me, and we ended up hanging out together all weekend, and the more I got to know Kyle, the more I liked him, as he did my friends. Monday morning came, and there was Kyle with his huge stack of books again. I stopped him and said, "Boy, you're going to build some serious muscles with this pile of books every day." He just laughed, handed me half the books. Over the next 4 years, Kyle and I became best friends. When we were seniors, we began to think about college. Kyle decided on Georgetown, and I was going to Duke. Somehow I knew we would always be friends, and that the miles would never be a problem. He was going to be a doctor, and I had decided to study business on a football scholarship. Kyle ended up being the valedictorian of our class. I still teased him all the time about being a nerd, recalling those piles of books he'd been carrying when we first met. He had to prepare a speech for graduation, and I was so glad it wasn't me having to get up there and speak. Graduation day finally arrived, and Kyle looked great. He was one of those guys that really found himself during high school. He'd filled out, looked good in glasses. In fact, he had more dates than I did, and all the girls loved him. Baba Basra. I could see that he was nervous about his speech. So I smacked him on the back and said, "Hey, big guy, you'll be great." He looked at me with one of those looks, the really grateful one, and he smiled. "Thanks," he said. As he started his speech, he cleared his throat and he began. "Graduation is a time to thank those who helped make it through those tough years. Your parents, your teachers, your siblings, maybe a coach, but mostly your friends. And I'm here to tell all of you that being a friend to someone is the best gift you can give them. And I'm going to tell you a story." And I just stared at my friend with disbelief as he told the real story of the first day we met. He had planned to kill himself over the weekend, and he had decided to clean out his locker so his mom wouldn't have to do it later, which is why he was carrying all his stuff home. He looked hard at me, and he gave me a little smile. "Thankfully," he said, "I was saved. My friend saved me from doing the unspeakable." I heard the crowd gasp as this handsome, popular, athletic boy told us all about his weakest moment. I saw his mom and dad looking at me and smiling that same grateful smile. Not until that moment did I realize its depth. Never underestimate the power of your actions. With one small gesture, you can change a person's life, for better or for worse. God puts us all in each other's lives to impact one another in some way. We all admire those instances when someone is really present for someone else. It's a trait that's easy to admire, but it's challenging to maintain. And this admirable goal is at the root of one of the most puzzling stories in the entire Torah that occurs in this week's parsha. Now, I want you to put that story in the back of your head. The power of a moment. This is a very strange story. Moshe Rabbeinu grows up, lives in Egypt. He's a prince. And we all know the story, right? Moshe's life starts with three women. Yocheved, his mother. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi. Vayikach isha. Vatar, vatele ben. Doesn't even tell us their names. She gives birth to him. Vatero toki tofu. She sees that he's good. I'll spare you the discussion about what that pasuk, what that verse really means. She sees this baby. She sees that there's something special about him. And she gets that at a certain point, she can't hide him anymore. Because we all know, Paro decreed all the baby boys, Hayaora Tashlechu, they're supposed to be thrown in the Nile. So she puts him in a teva on the Nile River. Next woman, the next character is a woman. Who is that? Bat Paro. Bat Paro goes down to the Nile River, right? The Or, and she sees a teva, a cradle, a basket of reeds. It's debatable exactly what happens, right? The pasuk says "Vatishlach et amata." What that literally means, the ama is the arm. She reaches out her arm to reach this baby. There's one day that says, word opinion says not that she reaches out her arm. What's another word for ama? Ama is also, anybody know? A maidservant. She sends her maidservant down to the river. So the Medrash says, actually, that there was a miracle. The baby was in the middle of the Nile. Nile's a massive river. I don't know if anybody's ever been to Egypt. Don't go. You don't need to go. Right in the middle. And she sees this baby, and she stretches out her arm, and there's like a miracle. She becomes like Plastic Woman. And her arm stretches out all the way and catches the reed. Now, I'll tell you something interesting, by the way. This is one of those doo-doo-doo-doo. This Shabbos, when you're in Shul, go look at the Sefer Torah on this pasuk, Vatishlachet Amata. The mem in Amata is elongated. It's like four times the size of a normal letter. It stretches across the line, right? As if to give credence to that medrash, which is a very strange thing that I'm not going to comment on, but there's something going on. The Kutzker Rebbe asks a phenomenal question, right? The cradle is all the way in the middle of the river. One opinion in the medrash is that she stretches out her hand and a miracle occurs. The obvious question is, well, why'd she stretch out her hand? You know? Like, imagine if there's a miracle, and overhead there's like a bird flying 100 feet in the air, and a miracle happens, and my arm reaches. Why would I reach my arm at the beginning? Why did she send out her arm? Kutzker Rebbe says, if you want the miraculous to occur, you have to be willing to stretch out your arm. Powerful. What's the next thing that happens? Right? His sister, Miriam, is watching. And she comes over and she arranges for Yocheved, the mother, to come, and the rest is history. So his mother, Bat Paro, Miriam, all watching him. What happens next? Right? Vayigdal Hanar, he grows up, he becomes a lad. He's being brought up as an Egyptian prince. Right? Vayetse, lirot et achav. He's been taught to see. And so he goes out to see. That's the beginning of the journey of Moshe. By the way, it's interesting. Seeing here is obviously not just physically seeing. He's feeling the pain of his brothers, even though he lives in the palace in Egypt. Where does he learn that from? He learns that from women. Women have the ability to teach us the power of seeing, of sensitivity. It doesn't mean a man can't be sensitive. It doesn't mean a woman can't be insensitive. But in Jewish tradition, the woman represents that sensitivity. So Moshe begins his life being taught how to see. Okay. And then we all know the story. He sees, he kills the Egyptian, he tries to stop a fight, he gets accused, gets sentenced to death, runs away to Midian. 40 years later, he's in the desert, sees a burning bush, has a week-long debate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does Hashem say to him? Lech red Mitzrayma, go down to Egypt. Shlach etami. Go to Paro and tell him to send my people. Okay, you're Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem says, go. What do? You start to argue, because you're Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, but then it's over. It's over. It's done. Moshe goes. The dialogue is over. And if you look in Perek Dalet, right? In Pasuk, Vaycharaf Hashem Moshe. Moshe is upset. It's time to already agree. Whatever's going on there. Ve'oreiti etchem asher tasun ve'diberu lecha elam. Ve'et amateh azeh tikach biyadecha. Perek Dal Pasuk Yitzayin 4:17. Take this staff. You're going to do miracles. Whatever's going on, and it's over. So what should happen next? Moshe should go down to Egypt. But he doesn't. Anybody know where Moshe goes? Pardon? Nope, that's later. Now this is the part people miss. Vayelech Moshe vayashav el yeter chotno. He goes back to Yitro. Why is he going back to Yitro? Why is he back in Midian? He should be going down to Egypt. Vayomelo, this is the most amazing. Vayomelo el chana ve'ashuva el achai. It's almost a language of request. I'd like to go and return to my brethren, Asher b'Mitzrayim. V'yaret ha'odam chayim, let me see if they're still alive. V'yomer Yitro l'Moshe, lech l'shalom. And Yitro says, okay, go in peace. What is this all about? What is he asking Yitro? God comes, right? Sam Green hears a voice. Middle of the night, Hashem comes to him. What's your real name, Shmuel?
Yeah.
Says Shmuel. Oh, it's like a pasuk, you know? Shmuel. And Shmuel's like, Hineni. And the heavenly voice comes to Shmuel and says, Shmuel, Lech Shanabet, go be here Shanabet. What does Shmuel do? He calls up his parents. I want to stay Shanabet. Why are you calling him back? Kosh Baruch Hu tells you to stay Shanabet. So you would say, because the Torah tells that's what Moshe does. I'm going to get a great call from somebody this week. I'm very excited, right? But okay. Well, what does this mean? Why is he going back to Yitro? And so then Hashem comes back to Moshe in Midian, b'Midian, lech shuv Mitzrayim, go return to Egypt. Why this repeated dialogue? Why doesn't Moshe go straight? There's a lot of discussion to be had here, and I urge you to look up some of the commentaries over Shabbat, but I'll give you one way of looking at this. There is a voice that is always telling us what we're meant to do. It's that inner voice. It's a voice that comes from Hashem. And we deep down, we know. We know what to do. And all kidding aside, I'm very jealous of people who think they always know the answer. Everybody's supposed to do this. Everybody's supposed to live in Israel. Everybody's supposed to go to the army. Everybody's supposed to stay Shana Bet. Everybody's supposed to go to yeshiva. Everybody's supposed to keep plat. Whatever it is. I'm not so sure. I think different people have different paths, different journeys. And deep down, you got to get deep into there to know what it is Hashem wants of you. Whatever that is. And even Moshe Rabbeinu has to struggle with this voice. Hashem is telling Moshe what to do, but he's not removing Moshe's ability to make a choice. That conundrum is inherent in this story, but that's not the most amazing part of the story. Now the Lifshitz Rebbe is correct. Vayikach Moshe et ishto ve'et banav, vayarkivim al hachamor. Oh, this is a great part. The Hasidim have a field day. And he puts them on the donkey, right? Vayashav arzah mitzayim. Mashiach is coming, rochev al hachamor, riding on a donkey. We're not going to go there right now. It's a powerful idea. Vayashav arzah mitzayim, he returns to Egypt. Vayikach Moshe et matel Elohim b'yadah. And Moshe takes the staff. We'll talk about that next week. Vayomer Hashem to Moshe, so Hashem says to Moshe, and they have this, all you're going to have signs, you're going to do miracles, you talk to Paro. Va'omar elecha shlachet b'ni v'yavduni. You're going to speak to Paro and you're going to tell him, send my people that they might serve me in the desert, what that's about. Vayehi baderech b'malon. And he's on the way. In the malon, what's the malon? It's an inn. He's in the hotel. He gets to the Howard Johnson. Vayif kashay Hashem. And Hashem bumps into him. He meets God. That's kind of a funny thing for the pus to say. He's been talking to God. So Hashem's very tricky. He says, you go, and then he gets ready. I'm here, right? Okay. A little weird. Vayivakesh hamita. And Hashem wants to kill him. Why? Because Hashem's a psychopath. Hashem's schizophrenic. What's this pasuk talking about? Vatikach tzipora tso. So tzipora, now what do you do? If you're a Jewish woman, and you're married to a Moshe, and you see God's trying to tell him, what do you do? I don't know what to do. Oh, I know what to do. I'll grab a rock and circumcise my son. That must be it. Huh? So I'm not even going to go into, like, you know, how this must have worked. I'm sure it wasn't pleasant. By the way, the reason she does this, not him, is because if he tried to do this, she would have killed him. But okay. Vatikach tziporatzo, vatichot et orlat bena. She cuts off the bris. Vatigal raglav. And somehow she touches his feet. His feet are touched. The Medrash says Moshe's head is swallowed by a snake. Whatever's going on here. Vatomer ki chatan damim atali. You are the groom of blood to me. This is like something out of a freaky movie that you're wondering why you're wasting nights later to watch because it's ridiculous, but okay. And the orla, the foreskin is removed, and she says, you are a groom of blood to me, right? And then the next pasuk is, Vayomer Hashem l'Aaron, lech likrat Moshe. The story's over. So you get this chronology. Hashem says, go to Egypt. Moshe goes, struggles, should I go, should I not go, talks to Yitro. Finally he goes, Hashem says, this is what you're going to do. Oh! Hashem bumps into him, tries to kill him. Zipporah circumcises the baby, and now we're back to our program. What is this? This is a crazy story. Agreed? Crazy story. By the way, what would have happened if Zipporah would not have circumcised their son? Moshe would have died. That became Lamita. Putting aside the whole Midrash, the Midrash here is so powerful. Moshe gets swallowed by the serpent, by a snake. Now, what's a snake in Jewish tradition? The snake is, it's evil, it's temptation, it's Yetzer Hara. Moshe's being consumed by some negative force. He's succumbing to his Yetzer Hara, to his evil. Well, what's going on here? And what does this have to do with the bris? Where does Tzipora come up with this idea? What is this doing here? So the Mefarshim don't. There's a Gemara in Nedarim. The Gemara in Nedarim on Daf Lamed Beis, and I'm only going to quote you a part of it. You should look this up. This is a crazy Gemara. Okay, it's on Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis. Okay, 31b at the bottom in the Tractate of Nedarim. By the way, everything in Nedarim, especially the Agaratot, are about the vows that we make. Putting aside the difference between a Shvua and a Neder, one is something that I vow to do, one is something I desist from doing. However, the difference between a Neder and Shvua. Nedarim basically are those promises. They're related to the promises that I make, the things I'm meant to do, the things I don't live up to. So the Gemara says like this. Rebbe Omer Gdola Mila. Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, this was the greatest of his generation, the editor of the Mishnah, says, Mila, circumcision is great. Shekola mitzvot she'asa Avram Avinu lo nikra shalem ad shemal. With all the mitzvot and all the great deeds that Avram did, he was only called whole and complete when he was circumcised. Right? The Pasuk says, go before me and be tamim, and that's where he was given the bris, the mitzvah of doing a bris. Tanya, so there's a brayta. Okay? Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha Omer, Gdola Mila, Shekol Zchuyot She'asav Moshe Rabbeinu Lo Amdu Lo, K'shinit Rashel Min Amila. You know how we know that Mila is such an important mitzvah, that circumcision is so important? Because all the good deeds that Moshe did, all the merits he had, were as naught when he was lax in the mitzvah of circumcision of Mila. Hashem wanted to kill him. Now, pshat in this Gemara, right, the context is to understand that Moshe has a son, and the son is born, but the son isn't circumcised. And we know there's a mitzvah on the eighth day you have to circumcise your son. And Moshe Rabbeinu should have circumcised his son. And because he doesn't circumcise his son, Hashem's going to kill him. Now the obvious problem here is, okay, it's a mitzvah, you should do it. But first of all, why does a person who doesn't circumcise his son deserve death? That's pretty strange. On a deeper level, what does it mean, allegorically, when Hashem says somebody is worthy of death? It means that this person is no longer worthy of, there's no point to this person being here. He cannot fulfill his role in this world. A person can do certain things or reach a point where the world would be better off without him. There's something about this moment that suggests that if this is who Moshe has become, there's no point to a Moshe Rabbeinu. He can't redeem the Jewish people. There's no merit to him. Which is unbelievable. We have to understand that. So the Gemara continues. And the Gemara says, Amar Rebbe, chas v'shalom, shemoshe Rabbeinu nitashel min hamilah. God forbid that Moshe Rabbeinu was lax about a mitzvah, about bris milah, about circumcision. That's not what's going on here. Ela kach amar. This is what Moshe said. Emol ve'etze sakanahi. The baby was born. It's the eighth day. I have to circumcise my son. But Hashem has just told me, lech shuv mitzrayim, go to Mitzrayim. Now, if you circumcise your son, you're not allowed to travel for 3 days. In fact, I think I once shared with you that Rav Raya Mashri in the Kovno Ghetto was asked this question. And this is a psak that was repeated by many, many Gedolei Torah during the Holocaust, Menachem Zember, right, whatever, I'll spare you, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, that it's too dangerous. You're not allowed to circumcise a child and travel within 3 days. It's a sakanas nefashos. It puts the child at risk. And therefore, they paskind that babies should not be circumcised. Because in the Holocaust, in most circumstances, you just never knew whether you were going to be able to stay where you were. They could come and grab you up any day. You know, that the father could go out to work in the morning and disappear and never come back in the ghetto. They had to move the child. It was too dangerous. And therefore, Jewish babies were not circumcised. There were mass circumcisions of whoever survived after the Holocaust because they weren't allowed to get a circumcision. And that's halacha. That's how we paskin. So Moshe has to go to Mitzrayim. So if he does a circumcision, he's not allowed to go. And if, on the other hand, it says on the third day when they were in pain, the story of people in Shechem who circumcised themselves, and we know that whole story. In other words, they couldn't move. It's tremendous danger on the third day. And if he says, okay, but I'll do a circumcision, I'll wait 3 days. Hashem says that I should go to Egypt and I should wait. The Jewish people should wait to be redeemed for the mitzvah. So if that's true, then Moshe was right. Why was he punished? Why was this a serious sack of this? Listen to this. He gets to the motel. Okay, now he's not traveling. He's in the motel. Now already he can do the circumcision, but he's like checking in. He's busy making sure they have towels in the room. You have a moment now. You have a mitzvah. You should do the mitzvah first. That's what Gemara says. I don't know about you. This Gemara tells me nothing. Like, so before the question was, why is he being punished for not doing a milah? Now the question is, why is he being punished for not doing a milah right away? Like, I don't understand. Why is that worthy of death, and what's going on here? Shenemar vahiba derech b'malah. Because the pasuk says, this whole thing happens when he's on the road, in the hotel, in the motel. Ask me an obvious question. But in the context of this drash, ask me an obvious question. Moshe gets to the motel, and now he's being held accountable because he doesn't do a circumcision. What's the obvious question? Why can't he do a circumcision before? Because what? Because he's traveling. So he's now in the motel. But he's still traveling. He's not in Egypt yet. So the Mizrahi says, oh, you know what? It must be that they're in Egypt. Right? What does Rashi say? Rashi here says, he was dealing with the hotel first. And only afterwards the circumcision. He should have dealt with the circumcision first. So Rashi understands this question. It doesn't make sense. He says, no, this motel was close to Egypt. It was no longer dangerous. Right? You can circumcise a baby in the shul and then take them home. It's only a serious journey. So this is no longer a serious journey. He was 8 days. And because the baby was 8 days old, right, they were only traveling for a day. So therefore, the chiyuv is still that day. So the Mizrahi and the Maharal ask a really good question. Is Rashi a Navi here? How does he know that the motel is there? So there are different possibilities. One possibility is because after they stay in this motel, you no longer see mention of Yocheved and these babies. It's almost like Moshe brings them to a place close to Egypt. He doesn't want to bring them into Egypt. It must have been, that could be. The Ran, Shenemar baderech b'malon, mashma d'miyad sheba min aderech nitasek b'malon, v'yal limol mitchila, heach yimol kevin sh'yalo adayin latzeit baderech, yesh lomar d'oto malon samuch l'mitzrayim haya. Says the same thing. It was close to Egypt. They're very difficult. I didn't know it was close to Egypt. So the Maharal says an unbelievable thing. The Maharal says, the issue here is not about whether the chiyuv to do a bris. The issue is, if the Jewish children in Egypt are being thrown in the Nile River, and you're dealing with towels in the hotel, something's wrong. Something's wrong. What does a bris represent? Why do we do a bris? What is a bris about? Hashem created us, and there's an imperfection. Hashem created us imperfect, and we actually have to be partners in perfecting ourselves. The bris represents two things. It represents the idea. By the way, it's not accidental that the mitzvah of the bris occurs in that spot, which represents human desire, the yetzer. The bris represents the idea that I can fix, I can do a tikkun, I can elevate myself, I can resist the urges, I can rise above the animal me and become spiritual me. I can harness the physical to make a more perfect world. But it represents equally libriyot, it represents equally the idea that this world is imperfect and that I should be driven to make the world more perfect. And what's powerful about this moment is that it's a moment. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is a dangerous thing to say, it's worth quoting Rav Nevin Zal, who very often suggests that when we take the Avos to task and we say what we think Yosef did wrong and what we think Avram did, we have to remember what we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet, within the context of learning Torah, we have to imagine that Moshe is like us. And then we have to remember he's not like us. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm going to sit here and judge Moshe Rabbeinu. I'd like to get safely home, right? That being said, you have to look at it, otherwise you can't learn from it. Moshe Rabbeinu is told by God to go down to Egypt, and he goes back to Midian. He's talking to Yitro. You know what's interesting? When Moshe Rabbeinu is in Midian, and this is the Maharal. Maharal says an unbelievable thing. He says, we have no way of knowing that this Malon was close to Egypt. He says, that's not what's going on here. What's going on here is that the mitzvah of milah, of circumcision, right, was put aside in order for Moshe to leave Midian. But once Moshe left Midian, that's a different story. Moshe has become Midianite. He's been there for almost 40 years. Hashem himself is saying to him, go down to Egypt, and Moshe Rabbeinu still feels a need to go back home. Should I leave? Before you can get Moshe into Egypt, you have to get him out of Midian. What does this remind you of? What do we celebrate on Pesach? Yitziat Mitzrayim. Do you ever wonder why it's called Yitziat Mitzrayim? Why don't we celebrate Knisa L'Aretz? Why did we get out of Egypt? We got out of Egypt so we could go get a Torah. Why did we go get a Torah? We go to Eretz Yisrael. So the real chag should be getting to Eretz Yisrael. Does anybody know what date is the anniversary of the date when Yeshua and Am Yisrael cross over the land, entering Eretz Yisrael as a nation? Anybody remember? 10th day of Nisan. The Pharisees and the Pesach, you can look it up at the beginning of Yeshua. Nobody celebrates that. In fact, you know what 10th of Nisan was? Shabbat HaGadol. We're celebrating getting out of Egypt. Because the first challenge is actually to get out of Egypt. Can I move myself out? There is an unbelievable Rav Tzedek HaKohen. Unbelievable. It's my favorite Rav Tzedek. The first piece in Rav Tzedek HaKohen, it's easy to find. Anybody wants to see this inside, you come over me, I'll show it to you. Reshit Knisat Adam LaAvodat Hashem, the beginning of a person's entry into a relationship with and the service of Hashem, tzarich liot bechipazon. It has to be bechipazon. You know what bechipazon means?
Hurry.
In a hurry. In a rush. Ki bechipazon yitzatem mitzrayim. Right? What custom, halacha, do we have on Pesach every year? Because the Jews had to get out of Egypt in a hurry. We eat matzah. Why do we eat matzah? Why don't we eat bread? Why do we eat matzah? No, come on. Everybody knows. No? Yeah? Because what? What does the pasuk say? Why do we eat matzah? Because what? Because the dough didn't rise. Terem batze kamalu. They had to get out in a hurry before the dough could rise. Do you ever think about how ridiculous that is? Seriously? Like the Jews are all baking bread and Moshe's like, let's go. He said, but the bread isn't baked yet. We don't have time. Hashem says we got to go. What are we? You got eternity to plan this. You can't give him. Like a heavenly voice should come out. It's okay. Give them 20 minutes. No, we got to go now. So the Medrash, the Zohar, oh, they sank to the lowest level of impurity. And if they would be in Mitzrayim, even another minute, they'll never be able to get out. You can sink so low you can't get out. It can happen. We'll never get out. Why does Hashem plan it that way? Says with Tzidkas and Tzadik, listen to this. Moshe Matzinu b'Pesach Mitzrayim, like we see in Pesach. It's the matzah was eaten in a hurry. The beginning of detaching yourself from the muck that you're in and the desires that you have, all of this stuff that a person is connected to,
there
are times in life when you have a moment. There's a window that opens up. And Zohar suggests that if the Jewish people didn't leave Mitzrayim at that moment, they would never have gotten out. Hashem creates the Exodus in such a way that it has to happen in this moment to teach us that there are moments in life when you get a window. And that window is open for a very short amount of time. And if you don't grab it, it closes. You're sitting in the basement, it's 10:30 at night, you suddenly get this desire. I want to start doing the Afyomi. I want to do a chesed project. I want to go clean my room. And you get that moment. But then you're like busy, and you do something, and it passes. And you know what happens? You lose it. You have to grab those opportunities to get out of Mitzrayim, out of the narrow places that we're in. Moshe Rabbeinu has a moment. And he has an opportunity. He's gotten out of Midian. Now he can do the bris. The fact that he's out of Midian now, and he's not circumcising his son, he's not involved actively in attempting to perfect the world, he's busy getting towels, something's wrong. That's not what leadership is about. That's not what we're here for. And the Torah wants me to understand this on such a deep level that if this is what Moshe has become, if he can't be so in tune with the pain of his brothers, which was who he was when he was a boy, now he's been stuck in Midian. He was 13, he put on the tefillin, it was so exciting, he had his bar mitzvah. But then he's been living in, I don't know, Boca, Teaneck, Efrat, whatever it is. He's gotten too, he's just, there's no vim and vigor. He's Nisatzek Ben Malone, he's too busy with the bowl game. He's lost it. And then every once in a while you get that window. And you got to grab that window. Guy's walking down the street. And he sees a fellow. And he trips. And he has an opportunity to do a mitzvah. It's a moment. And you know what? Sometimes those moments, you don't even realize those moments. But those moments are game changers. They change the world. And when you grab those moments, life changes forever. And when you miss those moments, you never get them back. And I'll just finish with one story. I don't know what percentage of the story is real and what percentage of it is apocrypha, but many, many years ago, I'm a fourth generation born American, and Baruch Hashem, a last generation born American. I was born in New York. My father was born in Waterbury, Connecticut. My grandfather was born in Middletown. My great-grandfather was born in Middletown. It's not so common to have a fourth generation. And his father, old Uncle Henry in the family, he came over to America like 1880. I don't even remember the exact date. And he basically threw his tefillin over the boat. He was done with Judaism for whatever the reason. And he came as the result of the persecutions in Russia or whatever. And, you know, his son, he didn't really know his grandparents because he grew up in Middletown. And his son, his grandfather was the guy who threw his tefillin over the boat. By the time my dad came around, my dad's an only child. He really didn't have much Jewishly growing up. And as I understand it, he went to Brandeis University, because that's what you did when you were Jewish back then. It's like that was the Jewish university. You went to Jewish university. It was Jewish. There wasn't a lot of Judaism. But he was in Brandeis. And he started wondering, like, you know, why am I doing all this? And I've heard two versions of the story. I've had actually both of them from my dad's. I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. This is the one I like, right? It's probably a mix, but that's how life is when you remember things. You meet some girl. non-Jewish girl, not sure. Back then, to even meet a non-Jewish girl, that was a big deal. Like, you didn't do that back then. So all the relatives start coming out of the woodwork. How could you do this? How could you do that? What's the matter with you? But he, as I understand it, had a legitimate question. You never cared that much about Judaism before. What do you care about now? And nobody could answer that question. But it got him thinking. He started thinking, like, so who am I? What do I want to be? And, you know, is Judaism for me? Should I dump it? He was the president of a Jewish youth organization in high school, United Synagogue Youth. It was a big deal, conservative movement. So he decides he needs to take a break. He wasn't enjoying college so much. He needs to take a break and go spend some time and figure out who he is as a Jew. Does he want to be Jewish, not be Jewish, religious Jew? Who's he going to be? So he goes to a shaliach and he finds that. He figures, where do you go in 1957, 58 to figure out if you want to be Jewish? You go to Israel. So he goes to some shaliach, some Jewish agency rep, and he says, okay, you know what? If you want to go see what it's like to be, you know, in Israel, Jewish, whatever, go to a kibbutz. So he signs up for a kibbutz, and he gets hooked up to go to a kibbutz, right? And at some point during the 3 weeks when he's planning to go and before he gets to Israel, he's crossing the street in Middletown, Connecticut, in Waterbury, Connecticut. The most amazing thing to me about the story is he doesn't remember who this guy is. He doesn't remember his name. He's standing at a crosswalk, a traffic light. Clearly not in New York, because he's waiting for the light. And there's a guy who kind of is standing next to him waiting for the light. And he recognizes him. And he's like somebody who knew him from this Jewish youth group, whatever it is, he starts talking. But it's not like one of these meaningful conversations. It's like we're waiting at a traffic light, and we kind of know each other, so we'll talk, conversation. He's like, you know, what are you up to, whatever. He says, yeah, no, I was in Brandeis, I'm going to Israel, I'm struggling, be a Jew, whatever. Don't forget, in the 1950s, it was not a given everybody went to college. You didn't have to finish college like today. If you don't finish college, you're going to Gehenna today. And then, actually, you went to college because you wanted to learn something, but okay. And he says to the guy, yeah, I Jewish and this and that, and I'm trying to figure out who I really want to be. So the guy says to him, look, where are you going? He says, I'm going to kibbutz called Kibbutz Negba. Kibbutz Negba. The guy says to him, look, if you want to figure out what it is to be an Israeli, great place. Israeli place. If you're trying to figure out what it means to be a Jew, you're going to the only kibbutz in Israel that raises pigs. You're not going to learn a lot about being Jewish in Kibbutz Negba. Why don't you go to a religious kibbutz? My dad didn't know there was anything such as a religious. So he calls up the Jewish agency representative. Oh, you didn't say so? Sure. And he hooks him up to go to Beirut Yitzchak. Okay, so he goes to Beirut Yitzchak. That's religious kibbutz. Second, third day he's there. Walks to the dining room, and my mother's sitting there. My mother's a firm Yid. She comes from Biyana Chassidim and went to Bnei Akiva, you know, whatever. And the way they tell the story, he takes one look at her, turns to one of his new friends, says, I'm going to marry that girl. And he does. In fact, my father's name is Paul, Rabbi Paul Friedman. And when my mother sent a letter to her parents back in England, I met a boy, he's very special, whatever, they got back a letter, there was one line from my grandfather that says, what kind of a name for a Jewish boy is Paul, right? It was a slow journey, right? But they got married, Baruch Hashem. And, you know, my mother had a powerful influence on my father, and he became a Rav, a rabbi, and the rest is history. And I'm, you know, all three of us, three brothers are here. We're all dati, we all wear kippot on our heads, or our children, our grandchildren, everybody's in Israel. Now I want you to think about this for a minute. Think about this for a minute. Because of this one person that my dad met at a traffic light, at a crosswalk, he doesn't remember who this person is, but that person's comment changed his life, changed my life. Every student, you know, there's a famous story with Yosef. Right, Yosef goes out to the field and he's looking for his brothers. But he gets lost. His brothers have moved on. So he sees some guy. Vayimtzeu ish. An ish, a man, sees him. Vinetoen, he's wandering around. He says, what are you looking for? He says, Tachai Anochim Avakesh, I'm looking for my brothers. The guy says, your brothers? Oh, 10 boys. Yeah. I saw them. Vigam Shabwashem, I heard them. And they say, Vigam Alchud Dotaina, they went to Dotan. And because he heard this, so Yosef says, thank you very much. And he goes off and he finds his brothers in Dotan. And the rest is history. Because he finds his brothers, they throw him in a pit. Because they throw him in a pit, they sell him to Egypt. Because they sell him to Egypt, he ends up the Mishneh Lamelech. Because of that, everybody goes down to Egypt. Because of that, we have the Shibud Mitzrayim. Because of that, we get out of Egypt. Because of that, we get to Har Sinai. Am Yisrael, 10 plagues, split the sea, Har Sinai, the whole thing. Because of one schnook who finds Yosef. We don't even know the guy's name. We have no idea who he is. You know what the most amazing thing about the pasuk is? I don't think this guy knew who he is. He sees some schnook who's walking and he says, oh, you're 10 brothers. He has no idea. He went about his business. You know, you're walking through the Rova. Have you had this happen? Somebody says, which way to the Kotel? feel so good, like I know directions. And you just directed somebody to the Kotel. But you don't know what happened. Maybe that person gets to the Kotel, has a mind-blowing experience. And because of that, his children come back to Judaism. And 100 years from now, Mashiach is born. Because you directed a guy from the Kotel. By the way, how are you feeling right now? If some guy asked you, did you tell me where the Kotel is? You're like, I'm in a rush. Ah! Right? We don't understand the power of a moment. Moshe Rabbeinu, on his way to save Am Yisrael, to begin the story of redemption that will change the world, nitasek b'malon. For a moment, we almost lose everything. And that's the power of Sefer Shmot. It matters. A person's name matters. This is the book of names. It's not Exodus. Shmot means the names. Every Jew has a name. We live in a generation that understands how easy it is to turn a human being into a number. Judaism was born in the midst of the society that actually, that's where, according to some in Western society, numbers were created to number their slaves. And in that world, the Jewish people come into seeing every human being matters. Every name matters. Every moment matters. And that's something to think about as we enter Sefer Shmot. The moments that you have. You know, it's the end of December, 2018. The 11th year of Oraita is halfway over. And you will look back on these days and these weeks and these moments. And trust me, as I do this, and you will realize how differently you could have grabbed each and every given moment. You will never have this year again. You will never have this night again. You will never have this Shabbos again. Everything, all the things that you have in life, you'll never have them again. Grab them for what they're worth. Discover the magic of learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael, of being in Eretz Yisrael in your own way. Because that's what's hidden in the story of Moshe Rabbeinu on the way to Eretz Yisrael. Shabbat Shalom.